know one time one of your friends, one of our listeners, complained about talking baseball on the podcast. But you know what? Fuck that. Our Astros are one win away from the World Series. By the time y'all get this on Monday morning, they might be in the World Series if they finish
off right.
the sweep of the Yankees tomorrow. So I don't fucking care if people don't want to talk baseball on the podcast because I'm super excited. Man, this has been a hell of a 6-year run. This is something I waited my whole life for, to have this kind of era in Astros baseball. And I'm going to root it on and be excited about it. And I love it, man. It's like it never gets old. You know, you can see why fan bases like the Yankees or the Red Sox and in football, whether it be the Patriots or Tampa Bay or whoever, why you want to win every year. Cause it never gets old. It's exciting as hell. And it's worth every second, every ounce of heartache sometimes to be this good every year.
Man, I think it's funny all the excuses that team's making as to why they aren't able to win. And it's like their roof was open today, and we had no problem.
Team.
Yeah,
good pitching and good hitting will beat. Good pitching will beat great offenses. That's just the way it is in baseball.
Yep.
And it is awesome. And I can't wait to see what this next couple weeks holds with this team. And hopefully, we'll be celebrating another possible world championship here soon. That would be kick ass. I will take it.
Hell yeah.
And people can keep on hating the Astros. Fucking bring it on. I want the hatred. I ooze off of it. And so do they as a team. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. No. It's nice being the dark knight or the dark horse, you know, of the playoffs, you know.
I'm straight. I will take it every second of the day. And but this is the Rebel Radio podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And how are you, man? Doing good.
Doing good. It's been a nice week. Can't wait for Halloween. Get the kids all dressed up and stuff. And, you know, that way they can have their fun. And, we move on to all the food we get in Thanksgiving, man. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles season.
I tell you, man, I had already gotten the little ones their costumes a couple weeks ago, and my oldest Michael didn't have his, so he wanted to go in the spirit of Halloween. Oh my God, that store! I'm getting old, Matt. I walk in there, there's all kinds of noise, like just ambient noise to make it spooky. There's music going on. There's more ambient noise. My senses were overloaded. I was like a grumpy old man. I was like, okay, I got to get out of here. I didn't like it at all. I don't know how people work in that environment. I'd go nuts. Michael found what he wanted. We got out of there, but good Lord, that was almost too much for my senses. There was so much going on. I mean, they got some cool costumes and cool props and things like that, but like I couldn't concentrate, and the kids were running everywhere, and I'm just like, it was. Oh, I don't know. I don't know how people do that. Not a fan.
Not a fan. No. I'm still debating if I'm even going to dress up or not. I kind of wrecked my chainsaw fell over and stuff in the garage and it broke last year. So Leatherface is out. And I'm like, man, I don't want to have to buy another electric chainsaw. Now you know,
the bald head going, man, you should like wax a mask, your face, like a hockey mask, look like the torn up zombie Jason from like Friday 13th, 12.
I had someone tell me that too, because everyone has a pair of jeans, work boots, and a long sleeve shirt.
That's right.
You just got to buy the fake machete and the Jason mask.
Dude, they had them at Spirit of Halloween. I saw that.
Nice. I may do that. I really wanted, I wanted Michael Myers, but they want, The mask isn't so bad. It's like $50 for the Trick or Treat Studios mask, which is the good one. Ones people wear at the cons that look really good. That's around how much they cost. But it's the coveralls that you have to get for that. The price, of course, right now is just hiked up. So I asked my uncle. I was like, hey, didn't you have a set of coveralls, like blue coveralls, at one point? You know, let me use them, man. That way it's like half the cost, because it's like $50 almost for these coveralls. And I didn't want to spend $100 on myself just for a costume I'm going to wear for one night. But he got them, and they're like 42 regular. And I'm, I've lost some weight, but I haven't lost that much weight. I was like,
baggy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, man.
Well, I was tempted to buy the Freddy Krueger claw they always put out for like $13, but then I'm like, I talked myself out of it because I'm not going to buy the whole ensemble. I just want the glove because it looks cool, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And, I do this every year Halloween. I'm like, I should buy a Freddy Krueger glove. And I'm like, I never do.
Just one day.
Walk around and like, my daughter, Waverly, she was not a fan of the store because there's a lot of scary noises in it. And there's props in there, you know, making noise. And she didn't like it. She's like, I don't like the store. I'm like, it's all fake. But she handled it okay. But nice. She's so little. She didn't care for it. But, you know, that's what you get in October. It is the month of Halloween, and we are in the midst of Halloween horrors here on the show, which we do every year in October, where we cover some horror films. And it was a good movie last week with 28 Weeks Later, and a good one we're going to talk about here soon today. But before we get to that, let's get into Download This, where we tell people what we watched, streamed, checked out this week. And I'll go first, since you went first last week. And
yeah.
I didn't watch a lot, but I know we both watched a big movies in theaters, so we'll talk about that in a minute. But I did watch episode 5 of Andor, so I'm not quite caught up, but I did get one of them watched. And again, man, it's weird because the idea of Star Wars is it's George Lucas based on the old movie serials that he watched in the 1940s, you know, Flash Gordon and those kind of shows. So we're used to Star Wars being very serialized action adventure. Andor is not that. It's a more complex, deeper story about these characters coming together to form the early days of the rebellion. So it doesn't always feel like Star Wars, but then it'll bring stuff into it that makes it feel like Star Wars. But I am enjoying it. I just, I'm waiting for it to break out into some more action, you know, that's my thing with it, but it's well acted. It's telling a good story. So I'm giving it a chance, and it's Star Wars. I'm going to fucking watch it. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I just, I'm hoping that we get some more action, but I like it so far. And the only other thing I watched besides the big movie is I did watch Werewolf by Night on Disney Plus, the Marvel special. And I actually really liked it quite a bit. It's black and white. It's kind of different, and it actually fits into the MCU quite nicely by the way they introduce the characters. And it's a lot of fun, man. If you've got an hour to kill, I recommend watching it. I enjoyed it, man. There's some cool character introductions in there. Some cool old style special effects and things they did to make it black and white. And, legitimately a very good hour of entertainment, man. The Werewolf by Night special, it's running on Disney Plus right now. So I would recommend watching that. And then other than that, I saw Black Adam, which we're going to dive into here in a minute because I know you saw it too.
Yes, sir.
Before we get to Black Adam, did you watch anything else this week?
I did. I watched the new Hulu Hellraiser. I thought it was solid. It's different, but I think they did a good job of making doing a reboot film that – you know, had a lot of elements from the original. I still like the original better, but I think it's worth a watch. So if you got a Hulu account and you've been pushing it off, I would definitely check out the reboot Hellraiser and give it a watch, man. It's especially, you know, this next week, you got to watch some scary movies going into Halloween. So definitely check it out. Not with the kids in there, because obviously it's bloody. It's pretty Hellraiser-ish, just like the other movies that came out. Just what you'd expect. You got Cenobites, you've got chains, you've got female pinhead, those chains, they hook into a lot of stuff in this movie and rip into a lot of flesh. So cool stuff, man. Cool stuff. Worth a watch. Check it out. Definitely C+B.
Yeah. The words of our other co-host Long, I'll pass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he probably would pass. Other than that, I've been playing some Destiny because they have a new Halloween-themed kind of dungeon that you can do. And it changes every time. You get to wear a Halloween mask and go complete these missions. It's pretty fun. If you play Destiny, definitely check that out. Get some new loot, get some new weapons and gear. I watched Day of the Dead. It wasn't Dawn of the Dead. I watched Day of the Dead, the one with the soldiers underground. That was kind of a messed up movie. Cool effects though. It's like a zombie gets up from the chair and they've been like unhooking everything to see if he can still survive without like his stomach, without his liver. And, you know, the doctor's like, oh, how amazing. You know, his stomach's removed, but he's still hungry. And so the zombie sits up and all of his intestines just come out, blah, you know? So it's pretty graphic. But you know, another one of George A. Romero's, movies, got a cult following, obviously. But it's free on Prime. So if you're on Prime and you want to check it out, it's on Prime. Give it a watch. And only other thing was the big movie, Black Adam. I know you saw it today. I saw it Thursday. And I thought it was solid. Thought it was entertaining. I had fun watching it. I liked the characters I saw. I felt like they moved quickly through his origin story, which, you know, they kind of had to. But it's a cool flick. It's fun. Cool battles. Pierce Brosnan was great. You know, that's my main takeaways.
Yeah, I was okay with the origin story because they came back around later in the film and completed it. So I was okay with them doing like that. Actually, I'm starting to prefer more superhero movies like that where we don't sit through an origin for an hour and a half. So I'm okay with that. Some of the same thoughts. I went into it, you know, just said I was going to enjoy it, and I did. I enjoyed it actually a lot more than I thought it would. It's an easy movie that you could maybe pick apart if you wanted to, but there's no reason for it. I mean, I think we're getting too harsh on these films. Just enjoy them. They're not all going to be Oscar winners. They're not all going to be Batmans or Dark Knights or the best of the best. Sometimes it's just okay to enjoy a film for what it is in the theater. And that's how I felt about this movie. And the only part that really annoyed me is another one of those kind of superhero buddy movies where, you know, you have Black Adam is supposed to be like this badass, and there's this teenage kid that he somehow connects with, and the teenage kid's telling him to say catchphrases. And the humor was fine. I actually didn't really have a problem with the humor. But like by the time I got to the end of the movie and the kid's putting on like a fake cape and all that, I was like, okay, come on. That was a little kind of dumb. That might be the only part I could pick apart of it, Ellen. But overall, the action sequences were extraordinarily exciting. Just seeing Hawkman and Dr. Fate on screen was badass. Like I said, Pierce Brosnan was fantastic. I mean, I really liked him in the role. Actually, everybody in the roles were fine. You know, to me though, man, does The Rock look a little old for being only 50? I don't know.
I thought the same thing. I was like, man, he's getting a little older.
He looks old. Like the action stars have come before him, Bruce and Arnold and Sylvester, don't seem like they looked quite as old as he did at 50.
People forget like, friggin' Stallone was 43, 44 when he did Demolition Man. Yeah. And he didn't look old. You know, he was Arnold was 50 when he did Terminator 3. So it's like if you compare, you know, Black Adam, Dwayne Johnson to Terminator 3 Arnold, you know, I think Arnold may look a little bit younger. Maybe that's because he has hair, you know. maybe that's why. You know, there's definitely something there that I, you know, that I picked up on as well.
And I just was noticing how I was watching. But, I was fine with him as Black Adam. I think he was fine in the role. Overall, I think that the movie was exciting. I don't think it necessarily changed the DC universe as much as The Rock himself has advertised it would. But that said, I can start to see the direction they're trying to turn things into since we were not able to kind of get the continuation of Zack Snyder's version of the DC universe. But I can see what they're trying to do to save it because, you know, you can see how he can fit into there, into this universe, along with Wonder Woman and her films and the things that are working right. And of course, they tie it together nicely with a post-credit scene that I have to admit, man, even though I knew it was coming, I still found myself cheering. I was like, that was cool.
Oh yeah. Everyone in the theater
I wish they wouldn't have CGI'd the suit. It's like, if you're going to CGI the suit, just let him use his old suit. That's probably the only part that bugged me. I'm like, oh, the suit CGI. It's like, come on.
I would have liked if he used Christopher Reeve's suit.
Man. That's too dated. I would just use the suit he already wore in Man of Steel instead of CGIing it into that blue and red shiny thing he had on. But yeah, we're going to spoiler territory. Superman shows up in post-credit scene, which I got to give Dwayne Johnson props for getting Warner Brothers to get their shit together and realize that they need to keep Henry Cavill around as Superman. And word on the street is that they are quickly developing a new Superman film because Henry Cavill's ready to go and do another one. So hopefully we get some news on that fairly soon. I don't think we're going to get Black Adam versus Superman like in the next Superman film. I think that it's coming, possibly Black Adam 2, but
yeah.
But I think Henry deserves another solo film before we get to that point,
Yeah, because you got to think, it's like, how many more years do you have of, Dwayne, able to play, able to play that role, and still kind of look the way he does, 5 or 6 years maybe?
Yeah.
Because that's around, how old, Robert Downey Jr. was when, RDJ, I think he's like 50 something, and he ain't playing Iron Man no more. Right. At some point you get old enough to where you kind of, you have to go in a different direction, kind of like how Marvel's doing. You go in a different phase, and DC, they're going to have to do that as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. Overall though, man, it was fun, man. Critics aren't really liking that much, but it seems like the fans are, and that's all that matters. I mean, I don't really care much about what critics say most of the time anyway. Occasionally I'll kind of agree with them on films, but like, I thought this movie was a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Good. Critics get it right sometimes. Other times they're fuddy-duddies, yeah. They don't know how to have any fun whenever it comes to these comic book films.
The only other thing my beef with the film was, the guy who played Ishmael, who turned out to be a bad guy. Like, they kind of gave away that he was a descendant. If you were who paid attention, I'm like, that looks like the same actor. And it was the same actor who played the ancient king. And then played him modern day. I'm like, they could have used a different actor. It's like they kind of gave, if you're really paying close attention, you're like, oh, I'm not surprised he's the rightful heir. He's the same fucking actor.
Or have him have like a huge ass beard or something like that, Just at least make it hard to tell.
Yeah, I was reading something too. They said, like, if you watch closely, like Hawkman or Adam, they deliver their lines, and apparently they look around in the movie a lot. Apparently that happened, and people were noticing that. I'm like, I guess I didn't notice it. It's like some of the lines were delivered for dramatic purposes, and some of the dialogue's not great in it, but yeah, whatever. The dialogue's not great in some of the Marvel films either. That's stupid, and they still make shit tons of money.
Yeah, you have this Terminator 2, like you said, you have this not as good of executed Terminator 2 buddy with the superhero kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work as well. He's trying to be like, John Connor, and you're like, you say hasta la vista, baby.
Right.
Tell him the man in black sent you.
And then the, I thought it was weird, the one scene where he first encounters the Inner Gang or whatever they're called, which that was a real original name, Inner Gang. And like the Clint Eastwood Good, Bad, and Ugly music starts playing. I'm like, that was a little, some of the music cue choices were a little odd. Then he just zaps all the bad guys with his finger, and it's like, oh, okay. So
yeah,
for the Mexican standoff.
I was like, is this really going to happen? I'm like, he's like indestructible. Why does he need to even like pace his shooting? Just do it.
I know.
Just shoot them all.
You could pick apart in the film, but, overall that was, it was fun. If I had one other thing, I would maybe have chosen better second tier characters than Adam Smasher and,
Cyclone.
I mean, they were fine. Don't get me wrong, but I just like, you know, maybe characters a little more familiar to people than just casual comic book fans.
And I feel like the...
If you're going to do Cyclone, why not just do Red Tornado? You know, do the android. I mean...
Yeah.
You know, this character's a little more familiar.
Yeah, at least that character appeared in Young Justice.
Yeah, Adam Smasher has been around a long time, but people aren't super familiar with him. You know, I was just like... But they were fine. You know, that's just being nitpicky. That's just more the comic fan in me. It was so badass to see Hawkman and Dr. Fate. Give me a couple more cool characters to see. You know, why not Hawk Girl? Well, apparently Hawk Girl was in the script originally, but they ended up reworking it, so she wasn't in it. So, but, you know, little nitpicky things. But overall, though, man, I think Black Adam was pretty solid, man. I enjoyed it a lot more than I enjoyed James Gunn's Suicide Squad, I'll be honest. I was not a fan of James Gunn's Suicide Squad. That movie's kind of just stupid.
That's about even for me. I don't feel like I liked one more. I liked one in different ways than I liked the other one. Just, you know, I think the comedy was more entertaining to me on the Suicide Squad, but that maybe the action, you know, was maybe a little bit more what I would have liked to see on. And Black Adam,
Has there been a DC Extended Universe movie since in the last year, before Black Adam?
Wonder Woman 84? It would be Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad, yeah. Batman was its own thing. Yeah, that's the first one since then. So it feels like there was supposed to be more because we're supposed to have Shazam out and
the Flash, Shazam
and too. The Flash and all these other movies and everything got pushed back, so.
The Batgirl movie,
which we're not even gonna see now.
Ridiculous.
But anyway, but Black Adam, man, I think it's worth watching. I really enjoyed it quite a bit. The kids did too; they liked it, and it's worth it just for the post credit scene. I mean,
I agree.
You know, this might be going out on a limb, but man, it might be one of the best post credit scenes in all post credit scenes because it's just it was cool.
You know? It was.
So, yeah, I'll give it that. All right, well, let's get into today's featured film. And I last week when I introduced this movie on our preview, I got the year wrong by about 15 years. I just guessed it was like 1953. I was like, not even close.
Nope.
This came out in October of 1968. In fact, it was the last movie to not receive a rating because on November 1st of 1968, it was when ratings went into official use. We talked about that a little bit. We did Dr. No a couple months ago. Not Dr. No, From Russia with Love. That From Russia with Love was one of the last James Bond movies to not receive a rating because it came out just before the ratings happened. And so this was the very last movie to not receive a rating for the ratings. And I would imagine by 1968 standards, it probably would have been rated R because it's not gory by our standards by any means, but for that time it was. We are talking, of course, George Romero's all-time cult indie classic Night of the Living Dead. The very first original zombie movie, which was done on a shoestring budget with very little studio help. Romero got a few actors and a bunch of his friends and a film crew and went and made this movie with very little money.
And, essentially.
And what he put together is a classic. A movie that made a lot of money at the theaters. In fact, because it played in small towns and small theaters and got word of mouth and people went to see it, ended up doing quite well at the box office. A movie that people in the heightened scares of the 60s and things like that, people weren't sure if this movie was real or not. It scared people. People were genuinely frightened going to the movie theaters thinking that the dead could rise and all this. And people would walk out of the theater going to see this. Can you imagine? I mean, nowadays it's unheard of, but it freaked him out. But the movie does. I really watched this and I've seen it before. You know, this isn't my first time to see it, but this week watching it, I really tried to put myself into the mindset of what it would be like to watch this in 1968. And I can see how it could be genuinely frightening. I mean, the whole setup of the film, listening when they're trapped in the house we didn't summarize this movie, but I mean, come on. It's basically the dead start rising. A young lady and a man are in a house and other people show up and they have to survive. I mean, that's basically the premise of this
movie. Basically
we'll get more into depth in it as we go. but I can see the atmosphere, the music, the listen to things on the radio, like it's all happening live. I can see how that played into people's fears in 1968. And they went to this movie, not sure if it was a docudrama or what it was. You know, you can believe why they thought it was real.
Yeah.
And it's remarkably well done, from the set designs to like I said, the atmosphere is a big part of it, to even the special effects with very little money, that are just done well enough that you buy into it. They don't have to be overly gory or overly scary, but they do just enough to sell you the product on screen, and it works so many ways. If there's one small beef in the movie, it slows down a little bit about 35 minutes in, you know, when they're boarding up the house and all that. And I can't think of the character's name. He's talking to the girl and she's not really talking back. And that's probably my only little beef with it. It kind of drags a little bit there in the middle of the movie, but the beginning of it and then the end of it, it picks up so well.
Ben's the man and Ben. Barbara's the girl.
Yeah. And interesting fact is that George Romero, often cast black actors in his lead roles because he believed in giving them roles and going against the stereotypes of black people always being villains or dying early in movies. And he felt like they deserved to play the hero role just as much, even though Ben doesn't make it through the movie at the end. He's still very much as a hero in this film. And I thought that was, I didn't know that about George Romero, that he felt strongly in giving African-Americans the lead roles in his movies. And I thought that was really cool.
Oh, neat.
And rightfully so, because Dwayne Jones, who plays Ben, is really good in the movie. You know, he helps sell it to you. You know, what the fear of it, what's going on, and trying to stay safe.
He does have a good performance in the movie.
He does, and he holds it together when the other people show up in the film, and he makes the movie flow well. Your initial thoughts on this classic?
You know, I see why. You know, it's entertaining. You know, and at first I think, you know, I was skeptical to watch it because of how old it is. And, you know, is it, you know, it's not, it's much, you know, it's just going to be unlike the,
was this a first time view for you?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised you've never seen this before.
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I've started it and then stopped around the time where you say it slows down. It's around the time where I kind of stopped it. And so I never knew that there were people downstairs. Yeah, that they just pop up, and it's like, man, why are you hiding down there? You didn't hear us up there. And then they're listening to the radio, and you have that asshole of a guy that just lets his friend burn in the truck.
What a dick.
He is, man. And then of course Ben comes in, he punches the shit out of him. But it's you know, for what they had to work with. It's like an Evil Dead kind of thing to me. It's really cool what they were able to do with a small budget. You know, I think it's, they're two examples of the same type of a performance. George A. Romero's, Night of the Living Dead and, you know, and, of course, Evil Dead, with Raimi. You know, you've got two really good films there and of course, same kind of thing. You had to get, kind of scrape up the money and get a film crew together, have friends help out. And this, you know, was put together with $114,000, made more than double that. And of course launched, George A. Romero's career. And you know, he became known as that cult horror guy, man, with all the Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead, No relation to Shaun of the Dead. That's completely different. Yeah. But the zombies in this film, odd. You know, are they dumb? You know, I don't think they're dumb because they know how to break into a car.
And they pick things up and they use weapons.
Yeah. They're trying to use weapons. You know, that they pick up the chair table leg, try and hit down the door that they just boarded up. So it's hard to see, you know, what direction he really wanted to go with the zombies, but he did work with what he had to make them terrifying. The guy that just kind of walks in the door as Ben's beating the crap out of the zombies outside. He kind of looks like, Paul Rubens, to me, Pee Wee Herman. If you watch that again, I'm like, he kind of looks like fucking Paul Rubens. And then he throws him outside and lights him on fire to keep away all the other zombies. And then of course the graveyard just keeps coming up and raising up, and the dead keep walking towards the cabin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately they're just not, you know, they don't survive. You know, these people just die one by one. And, you know, it could have all been avoided. The brother and sister could have made it if they would have just lied and said, hey, we're not going to come put, you know, yeah, mom, we put the reef on dad's grave, you know, drove 6 hours to do it.
Right.
Could have just lied, you know,
well,
could have been alive.
You said everybody dies in the film, like even the little girl killing her mother or the little girl. Yeah. I mean, that's, and it's very violent for 1968. Like she's just stabbing her. I'm like, holy shit. And, but it's all Bosco chocolate syrup, which you can still buy in stores today.
Bosco chocolate syrup.
That's what they use for most of the blood in the film.
Wow.
It's all shot in black and white, so you can't tell it's chocolate.
Yeah.
But
corn syrup was what they used for Carrie. Yeah. Red corn syrup. Same thing that they used for pig's blood.
Yeah, the word zombies never used in the film. They're referred to mostly as those things. But yet, we all, I mean, watching this, you definitely see the influence this movie had on. It's funny, we did 28 Weeks Later last week, which obviously this movie influenced that, inspired that, obviously inspired Sam Raimi's Evil Dead films. There's that, video games like Left 4 Dead, Resident Evil. I mean, there's nothing out there that doesn't owe itself to this. I mean, this is the OG zombie film. And the whole idea of zombies moving slow and creepy, it all comes from this. And of course, later on, as things modernize, we have super fast zombies like in World War Z that will, fat guys like me are never going to get away from them. I'm like, I'm just fucked. I'm
shit, dead. You better be a cheetah. You got to be Usain Bolt to get away from those things, man.
And, you know, but this movie definitely influenced all of those things. I mean, this is the original one, and remarkably, it holds up really well, man. It really does for 1968. It's I wouldn't say it's scary by our terms, but it's genuinely frightening in moments. You know, when they're beating down the door and Ben's having to run downstairs and trying to escape, and there's some genuinely intense moments might be the good word.
Yeah, there are some intense moments. And you know what was really intense, that zombie at the beginning, the first zombie got pretty intense. If you notice, you know, he's like just like kind of lurching around. Mm-hmm. And then, Barbara, she runs into the car and locks the door, and he just starts running towards the car all of a sudden. Like he just fucking drank a Red Bull and did a line of coke, and he's just hauling ass to the car, and then he can't get the door handle open. He knows to go to the door handle, and then he runs around the other side, like runs, man. You can tell the pacing, his pace just, you know, drastically increases. And then that's when he picks up the brick and he's just like, boom, and knocks through. And then she's like, oh yeah, this car can move. And she pulls the emergency brake on the vehicle and lets it roll down the hill so she can get away. But yeah, man, it's yeah. So you know, the zombies just like super fast, and you know, maybe not as fast as maybe World War Z or 20 Weeks Later. But I just thought that was just hilarious that he knew that he needed to tie up his laces and just take off. And that's like the only time in the movie that they do that, or he, cause he shows up later on. He's there banging on the wall, right. And she wants to go look for her brother, man, her brother's zombie food, man, brother's zombie food. He's gone.
Yeah. And he shows up at the end of the movie and he's all, and he basically, she's like, oh, sees her brother, and she gets her stupid ass dragged into the horde of zombies. I'm like, you dumb bitch.
Yeah, man.
It's not your brother.
And you know? This is the first, too, the dumb, useless woman in the horror film, you know? Yeah, she right. she started the cliche.
And then the ending of this movie always bothers me is, you know, Dwayne Jones' character of Ben, you know, he's comes out of the basement after seemingly it seems safe, and he hears the police, and just to get shot. I was like, fucking really? It's like, you know, I mean, which that's unheard of for this time too. You know, most movies in the 60s and 70s and 50s had a lot of happy endings, you know. People went to the movie theaters to escape and to walk out happy and not to have the main character killed. And you're like, God,
this is like invasion of the body snatchers, you know, kind of like that ending where you're like, oh no. You're like, it's not over.
in a strangely, Dwayne Jones never watched any more of the Dead films after he filmed this. He never even saw another George Romero film. He was very much though, but that's how he was. He was very much your professional actor. It was a job to him. You know, he didn't necessarily follow the careers of things that happened.
Yeah.
One of the girls from the basement, Judy, she still makes a living off this movie, appears quite frequently at cons. She didn't have much more of a career after that. So she made a living doing cons and being like, oh, I was the girl that appeared in the basement in Night of the Living Dead. I'm in the movie for like 5 minutes. And,
the girl at the end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, she does that too.
Yeah. It's like, look at me. I have boobs and I was in a horror movie.
isn't that every woman in every horror movie now? It's like, yeah, there's always some scene where they're jiggling around and then Jason comes around and throws them against the
boobs.
Yeah, man. A scary movie where it actually saved Carmen Electra from the ghost face in that one. That's actually a horror comedy we might have to do one day.
Fuck no.
That's the first one. But anyway. Maybe. But it is still a stupid movie.
But I think looking back at Night of the Living Dead, though, it definitely can be appreciated for what it did for the genre. Because even in the 60s, horror movies were still kind of underground cinema. I would say, you know, you had the Hammer horror films and stuff that were coming out and with Vincent Price. But a lot of those movies, you know, would play like, you know, midnight screenings. They weren't highly successful, you know, and now you had this little independent film come along that made almost $2 or $3 million in today's money
at the time. That's
money for back then. I think it made $928,000 at the box office, almost $1 million. So it would have made a lot of money by today's standards. But you can appreciate what it brought to directors like Sam Raimi and I would even argue guys like James Gunn. I mean, there's not anybody who hasn't made any kind of horror comedy. It wasn't influenced by this film. Danny Boyle and what he did with 28 Days Later.
Insert any zombie film there. This film took from it.
I mean, absolutely. The House in the Woods. I mean, even a movie like The Cabin in the Woods was taken from this, you know? I think that's where this movie lays its ground. It still holds up well, highly influential. I mean, this if there was a Star Wars of horror movies that influenced things, it was this movie easily, you know, no doubt about it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair statement.
And I can see why a movie we're covering a John Carpenter film next week. I mean, even Carpenter had to have been influenced by, especially the style, because Carpenter is great at atmosphere, and George Romero really presents a fantastic atmosphere in this film, of giving you a sense of dread and horror. And that's one thing I really appreciate. I always really appreciate sound in movies. And one thing I do like about The Night of the Living Dead is the sound sells the movie eerie. as much as the performances do. Romero put you in this horrific place through the use of sound and music. And I think it's fantastic. It helps make up for the lack of high budget special effects, you know, and just using chocolate syrup or barbecue sauce or roasted ham in their hands to eat like they're eating flesh. So it makes up for that with the eeriness of the music and the lighting and the way he uses shadows and the black and the white. Just so much of that, you know, definitely other directors like Carpenter and Raimi, you can see were influenced by this. And I think that's a really cool thing. I always really enjoyed doing these classic horrors. Like the first year we did Halloween Horrors, you know, we did a couple of the old Universal films and last year we did Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is kind of a sci-fi horror. You know, it's more of an appreciation that these movies had to use lower budgets and music and lighting techniques to make the films more scary and horrifying. And where now modern films are all just like, how much blood can we show on the screen? And, you know, and they use CGI and it's a true appreciation for these almost works of art, these old horror films.
They really are. Yeah, especially you go back in this time, you know, there's no CGI. You have to have a good storyline, and you have to rely on sensory stuff like the sounds, the music that goes that works in way more ways in these films. And
Boxco corn syrup.
Yeah. Boxco chocolate syrup. You have to be creative with that. And George did a great job of it. It's still a movie that's watchable today. And, you know, it's still got all the notoriety that it had for.
Yeah. This is one of those movies that will be watched for a long time by people. It's definitely a classic. And it was a good one to cover. I'm not even going to give this a rating because, I mean, it's a classic. It's easily an A.
Classic. It's an A. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
if you don't give it an A,
it's easy to watch. You. It's on Peacock, Amazon Prime. It's on almost all the streaming services for free. I think Netflix, the big streaming service, is the only thing I think it's not on. It's on all the other ones, you know. So it's easily available to watch. All right. Well, as we do in Halloween Horrors Month, we continue our traditions of ghost stories that we started a few years ago. And so we're going to continue that this week. I got one or two I brought to the table because they're short. And I guess I can start since, Matt, you brought a ghost story last week. And if you got one, you can bring it to us in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me find some reading glasses here so I can see because I'm old. And so I always like to do Texas ones. So these are a little short, but I'm going to read the first one. Apologies if people listen to the show for a few years. I may have done one of these before, but fuck, I can't remember, you know? But the Driscoll Hotel, and then I put my reading glasses on and they fog up. God dang it. I'm having some technical difficulties here tonight. But so the Driscoll Hotel, considered one of the most haunted venues in the city of, and this is in Denton, Texas, by the way. I found these ghost stories about in Denton, Texas.
Nice.
And man, I'm having trouble fucking seeing tonight. Hold on. It is said to, so the hotel was built in 1885 by Colonel Jesse Lincoln Driscoll, who is said to roam the hotel, lighting cigars and turning on lights in guest rooms. His presence can be felt by the way of cigar smoke and his ever watchful portrait at the top of the staircase in the lobby. That staircase is also where a little girl named Samantha has been seen playing with a ball. According to Austin Ghost, well, this says Austin Ghost Stewards, but I was sworn I read it was in Denton. She was the daughter of a senator and died falling down the stairs. There's another young lady who has left many hotel guests frightened. On the fifth floor of the hotel, a portrait of a little girl holding flowers and a letter adorns a hallway. In her book, True Haunted Tales of Driscoll Hotel, Monica L. Ballard wrote, people often report that the little girl's eyes follow them as they pass, and they get a sensation of dizziness when they stare at the painting. Staff members have found the light near the painting turn on and off on its own, and while the hotel room door next to it has acted tricky, as if someone won't let them in the room. Then there is the infamous suicide bride. As the legend goes, in 1991, a young woman from Houston had her wedding called off by the groom. She fled for Austin with his credit cards and went on a shopping spree to end all shopping sprees. Back in her hotel room bathroom, she shot herself in the stomach. Terror has been seen loitering in the hallways of the fourth floor ever since.
Wow.
I wouldn't go to that hotel.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either.
It sounds a little creepy.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm just going to stick with one since I'm like can't see shit tonight.
Yeah.
So I'll save that page though for next week for the Paramount Theater, which is another famous theater I've heard about being haunted.
Yeah, so I found this one. It's not a Texas one. It is a Missouri ghost story, and it's the road's called Zombie Road. So I obviously chose it because of the name and what we're covering. But outside of St. Louis, there's this road. It's called Zombie Road. It wasn't named that until the 50s. It's got a bunch of paranormal ghostly activities rumored, and stories stemming from, sightings of indigenous spirits walking around, and a victim of a train accident. There was a woman in 1950, I think her last name was Lawyer Ford. And she was walking, out there and somehow just got hit. And so rumor is it that they see her ghost over there, walking around. They see a woman in a white dress. They see ghosts of Indians because it was an Indian trail at one point. It became a popular late night hangout spot for teens where they go to make out. And this story, it's unfabricated, but the story of a lunatic that lived in the hills and preyed off of, you know, young women and men that would go over there to kind of have some fun. There was a rumor that he would pull them in and kill them, stuff like that. It's unfabricated, but it's something that's come from this road. His name was apparently Zombie. That's what apparently what this guy's name was. So it became known as Zombie Road. They've turned it into a nature trail. Actually, the state of Missouri's been St. Louis, Missouri, turned this thing into a nature trail, so you can walk on this thing during the day, but at night they shut it down. And if you're caught trespassing overnight, then there's like some hefty fines you have to pay. Not allowed to go over there at night. So maybe the state also, you know, believes in some of these things that have been going on. It's called Zombie Road, and it's in St. Louis, Missouri, just on the outskirts of St. Louis, Missouri.
I think I brought this up on the show before. You've heard about the apparently haunted road over in Bear Creek Park, right?
No.
Okay. So when you go in Bear Creek Park on the golf course side.
Yeah.
And you go down that road, stay on it, go past the last turn of the park where the picnic tables are, and you go up to the next road.
Yeah.
And there's a road that connects the golf course to Attucks Fairbanks Road or whatever that road is that goes behind the park. And there's a bridge there. And there's been a lot of rumors that people have stopped on the bridge at night and they end up with handprints in their windows or mouth fog and things like that. And it's apparently a haunted road that apparently someone, committed suicide at the bridge one time.
Oh, wow.
And I drove on it during the day one time, and I did not stop. I just kept going. I was still married at the time. Mary's like, I dare you. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. We drove down the road. I'm like, I don't like this. This is really scary.
It's creepy.
It was the daytime. But there's a bridge along that road where apparently it happens. And you just made me think about it with mention the zombie road. But that's where we're right here in Bear Creek Park, 15 minutes from here.
That's interesting.
No thanks.
No.
Dude, I can't imagine. I'd fucking freak out if suddenly Pam Prince ended up in my window. I'd be like, holy shit. I'd be like, no, not good. All right. Well, good stuff. More ghost good stories stuff. Next week.
Yes.
So are we doing this month in?
We sure are. History? Oh, we sure are.
Because there's not a whole ton of news. So that's good. That's pop culture history. It's the monthly feature we bring to you once a month where we talk what happened this month in pop culture history and what do we got in October?
Yeah. So this month, pop culture history, 1968. You might remember this film, Bullet, directed by Peter Yates, starring Steve McQueen.
Never seen it before.
Was first released. Yep. Ringing a bell. No. But I thought that was cool to mention because I was like, oh, we just covered that movie. We almost talked about it on its anniversary, I guess. Yeah. But another 1968 movie. 2018, just 4 years ago, Halloween reboot was released, made a record $77 million for a horror film with a female lead. It's the biggest debut of any film with a female lead over 55 in the U.S. because she was over 55. So it's like, you know,
I've only ever seen one Halloween movie. It's the one that we, I don't want to jump the gun, but yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not a fan.
1955, the publication of Return of the King, the third and final volume of Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien, was released in London.
And it created this rabid fan base that's pissed off at the Rings of Power and blah, 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 blah. And I need to get caught up with the Rings of Power. I enjoyed what I've watched so far, and I like it, and I enjoy the Lord of the Rings movies, and you know what?
Just enjoy it. Be happy with what you got.
But 55 years, man. That's great. Or 1955, he said. So over 50 years since it came out.
Yeah.
We will get around to the Return of the King eventually. We got the Two Towers coming up in December, since it'll be 20 years since it came out. So I imagine next year will probably be Return of the King.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're going
to
do it.
We're going to have to. 1978, Halloween, directed by John Carpenter, starring David Pleasance and Jamie Lee Curtis, and her film debut is released.
Obviously, no way that came out in October.
Yeah, it's for some reason the movie named Halloween came out just 11 days before Halloween.
You remember that? This isn't that long ago, so you probably remember this. Just maybe 10 years ago, horror movies only came out at Halloween.
Yeah,
or in the month of October, and then
now January,
you started getting some successful films like I think some of the Saw movies came out early in the year and in the summertime, and
yeah,
and so it started branching out to other times of the year. But there was a time where horror movies only came out in September and October. That was it. You never saw them any other time of the year.
Yeah, and I think they belong, you know, condensed into October. It's like we should have, you know, well, maybe, you know, maybe not all of them. I guess you can have some releases, but I'm like, man, that'd be cool if there was more than one horror movie I was, you know, prompted to see this year. We had Scream come out in January, which it did pretty good in January. Now we have Megan coming out next January, which if you haven't seen the trailer for Megan, looks pretty damn creepy. It's like Ex Machina, but even more of a horror film. 1984, this month, Terminator, directed by James Cameron, obviously starring the great Arnold, great Linda Hamilton, released in the U.S. That's almost like an action horror movie. Yeah. Action sci-fi horror. It's really a mix of things.
Yeah, I mean, it has some horror elements with the idea of a robot that will not stop and will kill everything, and especially at the end when the robot's tracking her in the factory. But a classic, obviously. Not a huge hit when it came out the box office. It did okay, but it found a huge home video founding and enough success that James Cameron, of course, went on to make Aliens, was successful and was able to get his Terminator 2 financed and got the sequel made eventually. But definitely a classic. One of the great science fiction movies of all time.
1938. And we talked about this earlier, I think earlier this year, or maybe this was last year. Forget when we did War of the Worlds. In 1938, a radio broadcast of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, narrated by Orson Welles, allegedly caused a mass panic. And we talked about that when we talked about the movie.
Yeah.
This is the anniversary of that.
It's a famous story, the Orson Welles, and mass panic is probably an overkill. It did cause a little bit of panic in some towns where people were calling in and asking if it was real. And there were some reports of a few people got out of their houses and their cars. But I think mass is definitely overblown from what I've read about it.
Yeah.
But there definitely were people that weren't sure what was going on. There were some people that bought into it, but apparently partly through the radio broadcast, Orson Welles stepped in and said, "Hey, this is not real." And when, once he got word that people were kind of calling the station and freaking out.
Yeah.
And things, and definitely one of the all-time great science fiction stories ever written, ever told, about Martians invading, which played into the scare that people have of Martians even today. I mean, that's the story in the book and the movie that started it all, and Orson Welles and his radio broadcast.
Yeah. 1963, From Russia with Love, the second James Bond film based on a novel by Ian Fleming, starring Sean Connery and Daniela Bianchi. Premieres in London.
It's familiar too.
Yeah. Another one that we covered.
Hey man, you know, Bond is turning 60. I think around November 1st, I think is when the original Bond film came out. I have to look that up, you know, and From Russia with War Love is definitely one of the better of the, Connery films, and, a classic. And let me see when did Dr. No come out? 'Cause I know we're coming up on the 60th anniversary. October 10th. So we just, in the United Nations, and it Bond debuted in the United States in, where the hell is the United States on this fucking list? I guess it must come out at the same time, around October. So we're in 60 years of James Bond.
There we go. That's
crazy.
And lastly, 1988, Robert Englund, the actor who plays Freddy Krueger, of course, weds Nancy Booth. They've been together ever since. You may recognize Nancy. She was in Masters of the Universe. We covered Masters of the Universe earlier this year. Mm-hmm. So those two lovebirds been together ever since. So had to find a way to work in Robert Englund. And yeah, so
it was cool. We got a nice little cameo in Stranger Things this past summer.
Oh yeah, that was really cool. I thought they were going to have him be the bad guy, but you know, that was cool. They had him be like the original victim.
Yeah. Cool. Good shit, man.
Good shit.
October, spooky month. Let's do a little bit of news. Walter Hammond has stepped down as the head of DC Films. At I might have said his last name wrong. Hamada. Walter Hamada has stepped down. So the fallout from HBO Warner's Discovery's merger seemed like it had slowed down, but it has not yet. It had been rumored that he was stepping down for a while now, but he went ahead and stepped down as head of DC Films. And so we'll see what they do next to decide where they're going with the future of the DC Universe. And I have one simple word for him. Superman. Let's get another Superman film made.
That's that would be a good start.
And get Patty Jenkins to work on Wonder Woman 3. I think you can do some things. Black Adam was good. We'll see how The Flash turns out with all the Ezra Miller trouble. But I think that's your big key. Let's get Patty Jenkins work on Wonder Woman 3, and let's get Superman 2 made. Or Man of Steel 2, whatever you're going to call it.
Boom. Action plan.
And we can solve their problems for them.
Yeah, just hire us.
Did you see the Creed 3 trailer?
I did.
I think it looks good, man. And when I texted you about it, man, you got to stop thinking nostalgic, man. Adonis has to go his own way. It's time to let Rocky go, man. Let the past die. Okay? Like Kylo Ren said.
Like the song? No. You can go your own way.
It's time for Adonis to do his own thing, and that's what it looks like they're doing with this. And it looks good, man. Jonathan Majors playing his former buddy. I didn't realize Jonathan Majors is from Texas. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So looking forward to that, man. I've enjoyed the Rocky franchise. I know you have too. And I've enjoyed the Creed franchise so far. So looking forward to Creed 3 coming out in March. Looks like good stuff. This is kind of short bit of news. Harrison Ford definitely is confirmed now to take over as Thunderbolt Ross in the Thunderbolts movie, which we knew last week, but he's definitely signed on. And Grumpy Old Man Report, Alan Moore is talking shit again about how he hates the Watchmen series and he hates everything he ever.
Wow.
Any of his work that was ever adapted. It's hard for me to understand this because I'm not an artist, but like, what's wrong with being proud that your work was adapted? I don't understand. It's okay to accept it. But he's just this grumpy old fuck that hates anything that he ever did that was turned into a movie or TV show.
Yeah.
It's like, he must be a miserable fucking person.
Gotta be.
That's the only way I can figure.
Yeah,
he's written some classics. Don't get me wrong. Some great comic books, but he just seems like a miserable fucking person. And I don't know. I wrote it down just because there wasn't a whole lot of news this week. And I was like, you know what? I just want to complain about Alan Moore being a grumpy old bastard.
Usually it's the fans, you know, it's usually not the creator.
Well, and that's what it feels like. When you read the things he writes, it feels almost like he's trying to be like, defend the fans. Like, oh, they shouldn't have adapted my work like that. Blah, blah, blah. Or I'm never going to watch it. You're not doing anyone any favors, dude. It's just like, whatever.
His work was nearly shot for shot in that movie. He should be happy.
Enough airtime for that old bastard.
That bastard.
All right. Well, let's preview next week's film and as we finish October and Halloween Horrors. And apologies for it being a condensed version this year, but you know, I had to take care of life. A movie that a friend of the show, Winter, she's going to be happy we're covering because she adores this franchise and I don't, but that is 1978's original John Carpenter's classic Halloween.
The one, the only, the classic Halloween. Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago. Halloween.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
Exploring uncharted territory.
And totally charted.
Just talk.
Sure, sure.
The only reason she babysits is to have
a... Halloween.
Come on out.
Feels like a long time in the making that we cover this film. So, we've done Halloween Horrors for about 4 or 5 years now. We've never covered Halloween. I've seen this movie once, and that was one time too many. I'll try to give it a rewatch this week. I just don't hold this movie to a high standard like a lot of horror film fan films do. I can appreciate it for what it does and what it set up, but I just think that the movie's kind of a dud. That's just my personal thoughts on it. But I'll say more on that next week. If I can stomach watching it, and nothing to do with violence. I all mad respect for John Carpenter. I love The Thing. I love Big Trouble in Little China, but like his use of the Michael Myers theme in this movie is overkill. It's like over and over again. I think that's what bugs me the most about the movie. It's like he just continues to go to the same theme throughout the movie. And we'll talk about that, like I said, next week. I know you're a big fan of this franchise, but me, I'm just like, I'll let you fucking get a hard on over it next week while I tell you what I hate about it. So, fair enough, right?
Fair enough.
So that's on next week's show, Halloween. And I can sense Matt across me through the video screen that he just wants to like defend this movie with all his guts, and you'll have your chance next week, man.
Oh, I will bring it.
But until next time, man, the rubberradiopodcast.com. That's where you can find all your rubber radio needs. We're on all the apps, of course, iTunes and iHeartRadio and Spotify and all that good stuff. And we thank you as always for listening. We do appreciate it. Until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.